You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCRLP, 92.9 FM, Los Gatos and beyond. Tony Duchesne here, and you are listening to this show because you like to hear novelists talk about writing. As a fan of novelists, and as a fan of reading novels, would you like to step up your game and learn how to craft your own novel? Join my free 90-minute novel workshop on Zoom this Saturday, 10 a.m. Pacific, March 9th. Go to tonyduchesne.com/free. That's tonyduchesne.com/free. 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, Saturday, March 9th on Zoom. tonyduchesne.com/free to register for my free 90-minute novel writing workshop. And after the workshop, you'll have the tools to set up a plan to write your novel. And now, on with the show.
Hi, I'm Cara Black, and you're listening to Drinks with Tony.
Get on the Drinks with Tony show. Yeah.
You're listening to Drinks with Tony. I'm your host, Tony Duchesne. Today on the show, we have Cara Black. She's the author of Murder at La Villette. Cara, how are you? And tell me how I should have pronounced that.
I'm great, Tony. La Villette. That's it. It's so nice to see you again.
I know. Well, the last time we recorded was in person right before pandemic. And I was like, and what I was doing is I was because I was doing some traveling, so I was scheduling a bunch of interviews in San Francisco and then just holding tape until the books came out. And then I had to hold tape for you. And then it was like in the middle of COVID, and I was just, and that, so they got, a lot of these got released in the middle, right when COVID started, when we were just waiting for the curve to go down. Were you in France or were you in San Francisco?
I was in San Francisco and my book was coming out and I was going to go get on a plane, but it was canceled. You know, everything was canceled. Everything. So it was a strange, we weren't used to Zooming then, or, you know, doing all these online events, or, I mean, we did some, but so everything that we could switch to that, you know, but of course the bookstores were trying to figure it out as well. So I was just, you know, here. And I thought, wow, here's my standalone and it's going nowhere.
Yeah. And what was the title of that? Because that's what I interviewed you for.
The 3 Hours in Paris, the standalone.
Yes. Yeah.
And it actually did really well. Who would have thought, you know? But so many people who have March books, I mean, it was super tough, you know, especially.
Yeah.
Debut authors. Debut author and here's your big shot and then nothing, you know, it's really sad.
Yeah. But that happens often without a pandemic too. That's just, you know, that's the black swan event. Whoa, I was going to, before we go on, you're going to be at Vroman's in Pasadena on Thursday, March 7th. And then and do you know your schedule after that? Are you?
Yes, I do. Let's see. After Vroman's.
Yes, go ahead.
Where am I going? Oh, then I'm going to Tucson to the Tucson Book Festival all weekend, which is great. So I'll be there I fly right there, go there. And then from Tucson, I go to Connecticut, I think.
Connecticut, what's the date? The date in Connecticut is?
March 12th.
March 12th right in Connecticut.
Yeah, okay. I do two libraries in Connecticut, a bookstore. Yeah, Avon at Westport, and then Odyssey Books in South Hadley, Connecticut, or Massachusetts. Then I go to the Big Apple, March 14th, do an event.
Where's the event on March 14th? Do you know?
Yeah, it's at the Mysterious Bookshop.
Cool.
Otto Penzler. Yeah, Mystery Bookstore down in Tribeca. It's great.
Yeah.
And then I go to McIntyre's in Pittsboro, North Carolina.
So for those of you listening, wait to hear your city and then take note.
McIntyre's, Pittsboro, North Carolina, March 16th. And another bookstore there too.
Good fun. Good fun.
Yeah.
All right. So you did the standalone, and then you came back to Amy Leduc. What, right? Did I do that right? Did I say it right?
Duke. Leduc.
Leduc.
Tony, get your fingers up here. Duke.
Duke.
Leduc.
Leduc.
Very good.
Leduc.
Leduc.
So you got back to Amy Leduc.
No, this is, I did Night Flight. After 3 hours in Paris, I did Night Flight. So that was set in 1942, 2 years after 3 hours. So I did another story with Kate, the female sniper. And now we're back to Amy, and it's been a long, long time.
What was it like reacquainting yourself with her? Was that the longest that you had been away from her as a writer?
Yes, definitely. Well, she's always in the back of my mind. So, I often go window shopping with her in Paris, you know, we pick out clothes. So it was great to get back into Amy again. It was really nice. It felt like, what can I explore? How could this be different? Things have happened. I know we were all affected, you know, by the pandemic, and not that I have the pandemic in this book, but what, you know, where, how has she grown? And what new problems is she facing? And what would really, be really high stakes for her? So it was good to do that.
And so it is set in contemporary times. The pandemic has happened, but it's just not mentioned. Or no. Is it not set in? It's, oh, tell me. Yes.
It's April 2002.
Okay.
So April in Paris, but it's 2002, and it's not like the song. And so because I've been moving up with the Amy ones, we started 1993, 21 books later, we're only in 2002. So we've gone, you know, every couple months. Now she has the 3-year-old daughter. They're paying in euros now, but they're still smoking in the cafes. So, and your cell phone looked kind of like a brick, you know,
yes.
Well, it was getting less brick-like, but yeah, still.
That's so, right. The euro was like just happened. Is that right? Would this be the first time Amy would use the euro instead of the franc in your book?
Maybe she did it in Port de Versailles. Maybe she was, they were switching over. Maybe that was it. And you know what? I lied. After 3 hours in Paris, I did Murder at Port de Versailles in the 15th arrondissement, where they started, and then I did Night Flight, and now back to Amy. So in between the two historical, I did it Amy in the 15th arrondissement. Sorry, I forget sometimes.
No, you forget because you're such a prolific writer, because 4 years ago we interviewed, and since then this is you've done three books in between, essentially. Or was it? Yeah, three books in between this time, which is just fantastic. It's
just keeps me out of trouble, Tony.
But, does it? You know. Yeah. You get in a lot of trouble. I know. So I'm glad it keeps you off the streets and, you know, mixing it up with those gangs.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
What arrondissement is La Violette Latin?
It's in the 19th arrondissement. So Northeast Paris, it's big one. It's a big one. And it has very different parts. And in between, you have the Canal Saint. Okay. You've got the Seine. You've got the Canal Saint-Martin that goes up, right, with those walking bridges. And then here at La Villette, it opens up. You can see it opens into a larger canal, Napoleon design, because it was up here, was used to be kind of industrial, you know, because the Napoleon designed it so the barges could come from Belgium or Germany, or, you know, all this trade coming in that way. And so there were sugar refineries, biscuit factories. There was a huge slaughterhouse, abattoir, which is now a science museum. And so it was very big. It was on the, you know, just at the edge of Paris, northeast, traditionally poor, working class. But the people that worked there lived there. And to some sense, that's still true today, or at least in 2002. Because, I mean, in Paris, it used to be lots of little factories or shoemakers or leather, you know, silversmiths, and they all would live right near their little studio or little manufacturing. And now, you know, not so much. But still, at least until this time, you know, you could have a family, you could work, and still, you know, live in Paris in the 19th arrondissement. And it's not fancy, but, you know, people were very much, you know, kids, school, homework, they're working, shopping, you know, life was very much and right in this area.
So, yeah. So just working class neighborhood, that sounds absolutely wonderful, that I would probably feel like I fit more in than other neighborhoods.
Yeah. And there's a sense of community because they all kind of live around there, you know, which is happening less and less in Paris, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah. Less and less everywhere, I think. How much of the 19th did you kind of go in knowing already? And then what did you research as you were going through this book? And were there any surprises in that research?
Lots of surprises. But first off, this is the last arrondissement. I've killed everybody. I've killed people in every arrondissement. So I
you missed the 19th. One. See, that 19th finally gets its due. It gets its light.
Last but not least. And so I was like, I hadn't always been. So I had a friend that worked up there in IT. And I would go, oh, I have to meet you up there for lunch. Oh, I have to go all the way, you know, up there. And actually, when I started researching, I really fell in love with his street, which I hadn't before. But, you know, and that's also the charm. It has a lot more authentic and, you know, it's not like the Left Bank. But I didn't know a lot. I knew a few things, and there was a lot of crime. And then I thought, well, then I met a woman who was an architect, and she had lived there forever. And she actually, they had bought some buildings at the end of this little passage, an old place with ateliers and, you know, like little small industries. And they took it over, made their architecture office with her sister. She lived next door, like right there. And she was telling me all about, you know, this is what it was because I'm an architecture. She teaches. There's a big architecture school very close by and all these things. And she really helped me, you know, she has the eye, right, as an architect and kind of a historian looking. And she, everywhere we would go, she would say, see this, or, oh, I like that, or very cool. You know, yeah. I hadn't had that experience. So there was that, and that came out the social history, you know, of this area. And then I was like, I really need to know more. And I usually join a historic society in the arrondissement. But evidently, I can't remember. This one wasn't active or something. So I didn't know how to meet people who lived there for a long time. And my friend, who's a doctor, who was a coroner, actually, he changed his job and he was working in SOS MedSense. So it means like you get sick at night, you call the doctor, he comes to your house, unlike our country, but you know,
yeah, that would
they
be
come
nice.
To your house.
Yeah.
And so now he was doing that. And during COVID and after the pandemic, he worked at this huge, it had been the old Central Mortuary of Paris, and they sold it. It's a big arts building. And it's now there's a huge health center and many you can do yoga and all the anyway. And he said, you know, I'm working here now, you know, I'm going to be working for a while on our contract, but I don't know so much about it, but I'm working with two nurses, they're sisters, and they have worked in this arrondissement for 20 years. They do home health care. They go into people's homes, they, you know, and they give them whether they insulin shots or whatever. And so he said they really know a lot of people, they could really help you. So a lot of back and forth, blah blah blah. So I said, I just want to know people who've lived here a long time and who can talk about it. And so it all happened. One guy I was going to meet, he got very ill, but I eventually ended up meeting some incredible people who'd raised their families, people who, you know, had lived there and remembered what the street was like 20 years ago, you know. And that was amazing. And one man I met who's very enthusiastic about this book, he where he lived, there's a great little bookstore there. And he showed me across the street and he said, well, this is where the Hells Angels used to, the Paris Hells Angels you know, they called them the Angels. And this was their hangout. You know, it was a biker bar, but it was a biker tattoo bar. And I was like, ooh, that is, who knew? It's not that anymore. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. And he said, oh, yeah. And I remember before, you know, we had the police wouldn't come up here because this was pretty full of immigrants. We're really out here. There was a lot of crime, more petty crime, but, you know, no police. And you said, so the Angels were our police. Huh. And of course, if something happened and we needed certain help, we, of course, had to pay them.
Yeah.
But, you know, they took care. And it was not necessarily a finesse job, but it was done.
Yeah, yeah.
So of course, I had to use that in the book.
Oh, yeah, exactly. one thought I had about the living in the 19th, is it kind of like, you know, because when someone like me hears French, all they hear is French, so I can't tell if someone's from Paris or someone's from Côte d'Ivoire or someone's from the south of France. But like, you know, you go to New York and you could tell when someone's from the Bronx or someone's from Brooklyn if they've grown up there. Do they have that in France where there's a different French nuances when if you grew up in the 19th versus the
I'm not that great at French. I think people, it's more, not necessarily because you've got many Muslims, you have a huge Orthodox Jewish population, you have Portuguese and people, Germans who came when, you know, turn of the 20th century. So you've got this sort of hodgepodge. So the French is probably not so defined, but I know what you're saying because I'll meet some, because Paris is also, people come from all over to live in Paris, right? That's mm-hmm. where you get work. And so you could be from the South or, you know, Burgundy and have that, or Provençal. But what you said about the, I would say the 19th in certain areas, it's like the Bronx.
Yeah.
So there, but there's some really chic areas that are old, you know, gentrified parts that have lots of charm. But again, they were all working class homes that are really big. But it has this Bronx feel, you know, and yet some chic neighborhoods.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's cool. When you find out about the biker gang and the tattoo place and you're gathering all this, when do you find the plot to your story? Do you kind of have it set? Like, do you have an idea before, or do you immerse yourself in the arrondissement and then go, oh, wait, that, oh, that. And then you go, you know what? We're going to have to kill him there. How is that?
Exactly. You got it. Yeah. It's very,
is that it?
I know it has to be this area. Okay.
Yeah.
And how can I incorporate different parts like the biker bar or the Butte Chamont or this gentrified area? But I know there's going to be a murder. I thought, well, look, the water divide, the canal divides kind of the sides of the arrondissement. I think there needs to be a watery death. So I had my friend, we were walking around and she was saying, well, if Amy came out from here and the metro is there and the chestnut trees, would there be leaves or would it be winter? Or, you know, I had to factor in all that, which is very important because when you think there's clues and all that. And so I would take these places and I would go, what is the crime? And it would be personal. So I kind of go there. I sort of think I know where it's going. But what you said is true. The biker bar was an eye-opening experience because that was just great. And since Amy is on the run and she can't stay with anyone she knows, she has to, her daughter, she can't see her daughter trying to keep her safe. She has to stay away from all her connected world, right? She can't reach anyone or she'll be picked up and she's a suspect in the murder. So of course she's going to go to the bikers, right? The Hell's Angels, because nobody knows about them. And that's a great place to hide out. But one day I know this, he's the fleek, you know, a cop in the Brigade Criminelle in Paris, which is the elite homicide squad. And he's a captain of one of the groups. And so he lives in the 19th arrondissement. And I begged him and begged him and take him out to lunch. I said, let's, can you walk around with me? And the guy was so nice on his day off, you know, he kind of met me for lunch and we walked around. And that morning I heard on the news that a serial killer who had eluded the police for more than 30 years had been discovered. And his composite, because it was a murder of a young girl in the 80s, you know, when they do sketches, right? Composite had been on the police station's wall for more than 30 years and they'd never caught him, which is, you know, a dark stain on them. And when I met Patrick and we were walking around and I said, you know, he said, yeah, do you want to see where his first known victim was found? And I go, I guess so. It was kind of creepy. And so it was, you know, that morning. So we walked up one of these streets and he goes, it was here in this small apartment building. An 8-year-old girl was found murdered in the basement. And she had been supposedly going to school and never got there. Hmm. So in this very it's actually very family oriented. There's a residential in that it's working class people. This just rocked the neighborhood. It rocked the country. And, you know, they don't have so many serial killers like we do here, but this was huge.
They don't breed them like we do.
That's right. So this is huge.
Yeah.
And then never finding, and there were other victims, never, and they had this composite sketch. He had pockmarks on his face, you know, like acne scars or whatever, and never found him. And things went on, and there was something that was, so we had walked up there, we walked by the building, and her parents have gone now, sadly passed away, but her stepbrother was still alive. And we went in a cafe, and people were talking about that, because they were from, you know, maybe they were young when this happened, or, but there was this, you know, talk and this sort of buzzing in the area. Because there was this collective memory, you know, this never having been solved, right? Sort of like, I can't say it's the same thing, but kind of like the, what do you call, Golden State Killer? Remember him? He was just everywhere and no one could find him and they never found him until years later. But there was always that unease, I remember, when he was, we didn't know, right? Could have been anywhere. But, you know, not having, and having eluded them for so many years. And they also, I mean, this happened in their family. So there was this collective memory that was, I was getting a sense of, and how this impacted the community. Maybe there was guilt. Maybe there was some form of relief. I mean, they had young children and it passed. I was talking with someone last night and she said, that's like generational trauma, you know, because a parent would have said, you have to come right home or I'll pick you up after school or no parties this weekend or whatever. Right. It was, and that's just, so there was that, which I thought was interesting. And I really did not, I don't like to write about serial killers. But Patrick said, hey, this is something right in your doorstep. You know, I'm telling you, it was right here. And I thought, I want to focus on the victims because that's more important than, and the families than, you know. So I was hoping that I did that with some delicacy or just kind of, I don't want to hit people over the head, but I think that's important that that informed this kind of area. So that needed, you know, I have to be true to what I discover. So it's not all dark and you know, heavy in the book, but because she is a fashionista, right? She still has to wear heels and don disguises as she's running around. But there is that kind of background and it becomes a story thread just because of the way it happened. I hadn't planned that.
Wow. The that's so interesting because it's almost like when you say generational trauma, it sounds like trauma of the village too, because everyone's on edge. And so even if they're not related, they all know someone who knows someone. So there's almost a heartache in that part of the city for it.
Exactly. Yeah. People talked about that. I mean, it was very, you know, and the not knowing, right? It's always like the killer gets away. I mean, of course they would, So it was, it was quite pronounced.
But they did find, but in the true story, they did find the guy. Is that right or no?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, he committed suicide and wrote a letter. So it's not like,
Yeah.
It's a huge story, but.
No, that's kind of a bummer because you want to see someone come to justice like that. You don't want them to, you know, do it on their own. That's that, you know, that feels like a loss for team humanity.
Yeah.
It's like for team justice and humanity for someone who's like that. It's okay. Now we're on the losing side of it, but yeah,
he did it his own way as he'd done everything else. And
wow.
It was, the police were like, oh my God, that was the guy, you know? And there's a whole story. We can talk sometime about it because it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it does sound fascinating. Now my mind is completely blown by all that. I was going to ask you about, when are we going to see Amy's TV series, or when are we going to see, like, is anything in development? What is going on? This is where is it?
Now you're getting all Hollywood on me there with that in development talk. You've been down there too long, Tony.
I know. Yeah. Help me. Get me out of here. I'm a San Franciscan. Get me out of here.
Really? Well, it's optioned, you know, by an actress. Mm-hmm. And she had the option. I mean, it's been optioned several times by different people, but nothing ever got greenlit or whatever that is. And then she optioned herself before. I can't remember when it was.
Can we know her name? Is it public or is it not public? That's fine. You don't have to say. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah,
can't. Yeah, because it might not happen. But right. So she renewed, but then there was the SAG writer, the strike, right?
Right.
So that put the kibosh on things, and she asked for an extension. And we're like, okay, fair enough, because, you know, what could you do except go to Europe and try to get some, you know, development or whatever money in Europe or, you know, but yeah, why not? So it's still, she has a few months left. We'll see if she wants to renew.
Yeah.
She's found any funding or whatever. You know more than me about that world. Your world now.
Yeah, I kind of. I think it'd be kind of fun if it was actually a French production. If they completely just, I don't know if there's been interest in France of, you know, making it a series or, you know, I totally see it as a series and, just even, you know, some from Netflix France.
I see it too. I mean, you know, I mean, over the years, sure, I've met people. There's been interest, you know.
Yeah.
There was interest in the UK. I mean, I don't know. I think it's, you know.
So you know how the whole game goes, because now in the early days when there was interest, were you like, oh my God, this is it. We're going to do it. So there's more hope. And then after a while, you're like, it's never going to happen. And then all of a sudden, that's when it happens usually.
Right. I don't really think about it except when a new book comes out and everyone goes, oh, who's going to play Amy? And I'm like, you know, I don't know. I don't worry.
Oh, yeah. Now you got me thinking of casting. I got no one right now.
No, I don't either. Because when it, you know, the books first came out, I sure had, but those people are old now, you know, so, you know, these new generation, I'm not really up on it.
In the early days, who would you have cast in the early days? Who were in your mind if you had absolute control over casting and over the whole entire film industry?
It would have been, what's her name? The woman in Annie Parillo, the woman in La Femme Nikita, Luc Besson's film.
Oh, yeah.
Right, with the gamin hair and those legs forever, a great leg. I was like, yes, you know, this could be Aimé, and she could, you know. I always thought of her. I think she's much, you know, it's different. I don't know now, but I always thought of her.
I haven't seen that film in probably 20 plus years. I need to watch that again.
You
I
need
love
to watch
Luc Besson. Yeah.
It's good. It's good. It holds up pretty well, you know. I mean, kind of, but yeah, I love it. I watch it every so often. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
A movie that I tend to watch maybe once a year or so is 2 Days in Paris, the Julie Delpy movie. Have you seen that?
Oh yeah. Oh, I saw it a while ago. Yeah, where she walks around with Ethan Hawke or something. Or
No. That's before Sunrise, and that's a wonderful film. Kim Krasan, I actually had her on the show before. Well, we both grew up ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. I had no idea. She's the co-writer on that movie. That's like about her life.
Oh my God.
Wow. Yeah. The first film was about her life. No, this one was Julie. I threw you by saying Julie Delpy. She's with, I think his name is Adam Goldberg. It came out probably 2005. And it's essentially, she really wanted to show kind of the underbelly of not pretty Paris, and also a breakup that was kind of happening because of one little white lie. And it's just so beautiful. That's one of the films I love to watch over and over again.
Yeah. Okay. I'd have to watch that. If I watched it, I don't remember it.
Yeah, I know. I probably have the DVDs around here somewhere. Sometimes I make my screenwriting students watch it because it's such a, so it's so just, it does the structure so well, and it's so great and punchy dialogue, and goes against how do you not goes against but Julie Delpy has so much Paris, you know, Paris knowledge that she bring. It would be like us making a film about San Francisco and you never see the Golden Gate Bridge because we're going to make a film about San Francisco. Pretend like
Eiffel
anyone.
Tower. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Cool.
So, how much time did you spend? How much time have you spent lately in Paris?
So I was, I've been leading tours, trips in Paris in the footsteps of Aimé Leduc. We went last April.
Cool.
Yeah, we're going to go this April. So I was there in April, and then I went. I can't remember. And then I went back in September, October, because I could stay in my friend's apartment. That's kind of how my trips are dictated, So
is that
yeah.
When you're, is that when your friend's away? They're just like, hey, you want it? Is that how it
yeah.
works?
Yeah. Well, sometimes they're there, but they sometimes they give it to people, or, I mean, I can sleep on a couch or a spare room. I'm an old friend. So that's the least important. But she cooks and it's great. She lives in an incredible area, right by Les Enfants Rouges in the Upper Marais. So,
Yeah, that's the new very hip area. Because I haven't been to Paris since 1996. I'm going this fall. So this will be this will be the first time since 1996. So the last time I was there, they had the French franc. When I flew back, I had a bottle of Glenlivet scotch on me, a whole fifth, that I just sat there and drank on the flight. And as I was walking through customs in San Francisco, I was just talking to somebody about this because it's such a different time. I was taking like the last few pulls as I was going through customs, and then just kind of dropped it before I had to show a passport and go through my luggage. Just like nothing that would ever happen today. And I couldn't even drink that much today. It's just like different times.
Yeah. Oh, you'll like it though. It's changed a lot, but so is everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I just found out San Francisco has a Ferris wheel now. I haven't been there since the Ferris wheel. We have a Ferris wheel?
Yeah. You do. You do. And it's big. It's really big.
Yeah. It's kind of like London's thing. When I've seen the photos of it, I'm like, oh my God, that's a thing.
Yeah, other end of the band shell, the other end there at the beginning of the concourse or whatever. But the best view is still up from on top of the Dion, when you go up. Have you been up in that kind of copper plated tower or whatever it's called?
There's a copper plated tower at the Dion.
And you don't have to pay to go into it. You go left to the museum, you go to the right, and there's this, I think designed by a Swiss architect or something. But anyway, it's a tall thing, copper or copper net or something. Great view that you can just go up and walk around.
I've never been up in that. I've only been to the De Young, and I've always rubbed the toe of the thinker as I've walked through that courtyard. You got to rub the toe.
Gotta rub the toe.
Do you rub the toe
Yeah.
every time you go?
No, I don't. I
Yeah.
do the one in Paris. I do, is it Montesquieu or whoever? You rub his toe. It's brass. It's in
And where is
on the
that
left
at?
bank. It's right now near the Cluny Museum, the old thermal baths, which is
Huh.
reopened. You've got to go there. It's an old Roman baths right in Saint-Germain.
Really?
And it's they saved it from being destroyed, and they
Yeah.
there's a little museum, and you can go underneath, but you can see it right from the street, right
Can
on the corner.
you use the baths? Is it like
No,
a
Tony. No, Tony.
okay,
No.
okay. I'm like all I'm in my
The Romans
speedo.
in did
With
that.
my
Only in Roman
towel
times.
and my flip-flops. They'll be like, stupid
Oh,
American.
but they do have public baths in Paris.
Yeah, do
Yeah.
they? Yeah, because I'm kind of looking at going to pop over to Budapest too, because I've never been there. And I really want to, I just want to visit so many things I haven't been to in a long time. But I've never been to Budapest, and I want to go to the bath to just experience the bath culture there. And just take a bunch of selfies of me shirtless, which will be the scourge of every friend I have on my social media. So they'll be like, ah,
They're great. They're really great. Very
yeah.
cool. Spend all day there.
Yeah. See, just get a new vibe. And maybe feel a little better about being a Californian. I don't know. Sometimes I guess I've been driving too much in Los Angeles. I'm just losing my mind. I've been driving too much, and I'm like, I hate car culture. And then I just like, how am I dealing with this? It drives me crazy.
Yeah,
That's why
that's
I
hard.
loved SF. That's the San Francisco was just Muni. That's about it.
Yep.
Walk.
Now you can go to Chinatown on there's the remember the Stockton bus that would
Right.
go under the tunnel? Well, now that it's a Muni, it goes underground. It's finally finished after a zillion years.
So
So you can go.
is the Stockton bus no more?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, because that
Does
bus is one
that
of the slowest buses ever. Because it you could walk faster than that bus. You could crawl faster than that bus because it's just like,
If you get on it near the old, now what they remodelized the train station, down near the ballpark, get on it
Wow.
there and go, and then it, and there's no more Stockton bus, right? There's
Is that
still maybe,
was
yeah. So
Oh,
I don't, I can't answer.
oh yeah, the Stockton actually goes out to the marina, so that still has to kind of go somewhere, right? 'Cause that's the 30?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 30. So it goes to the underground Muni from the ballpark down there. It goes to as far as the border of Chinatown and North Beach, and then I guess the bus is there that goes down to where Marina, right?
Right.
But yeah, so you can go through, get off in Chinatown, go get your Chinese food, go for a cannoli, sit
Yeah,
in
'cause you're
Washington
right
Square.
by North Beach. That's so fantastic. Yeah, I
Yeah.
got to get up there 'cause I want to go hang out at Specs. I miss Alan Black and he's bartending there now, it's just
Oh.
I got to get all my I got to get up there and get all my hellos. My hellos are starting the hello list is starting to get long and overwhelming. So I think what I'm gonna have to do is just go up there for like 4 days a month, every month for like 6 months, and then they'll be like, okay. But our friends Kevin and Alia left to
They're in
Portugal.
Portugal. Oh, I
Yeah,
know. You better go visit them when you go over to Paris.
I'm go. Well, that's one of the main stops. I'm going to hang out with them and Caitlin. And just I'm going to hang out in Portugal. So it's the only thing I got, and the reason, one of the main reasons I go to Paris is because I have JetBlue miles, and JetBlue goes from New York to Charles de Gaulle, so I can go on my miles, and then so Paris is my landing spot. Well, I just got to stay a week there. Ah, shucks.
And then you just hop on an easy jet down to Portugal. Yeah.
Yeah,
Easy. Easy peasy.
And I've never been to the cemetery that's in the south part of Paris that has Baudelaire and so many other writers. It's not because there's Père Lachaise, which I've been to a lot, and I can't wait to go again because I've been reading Proust, and I'm like, I got to go visit Proust's grave. I was reading this morning. I'm on volume 4 right now, Sodom and Gomorrah. But Baudelaire, it bugs me to death that I've been to Paris twice and I've never visited Baudelaire's grave.
He's in Montparnasse.
It's the one that's almost like, yeah, south of Saint-Germain, or south of
Montparnasse.
Portugal. Yeah.
Yeah. Or out, well, there's, that's a big one where a lot of writers and famous people are. It's smaller, you know, than Père Lachaise. Yeah. Marguerite Dumas is Sartre and de Beauvoir are buried there.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Next to each other. Yeah. That one. Yeah. That's it. That was there. And on Marguerite Duras, that's her name. Marguerite Duras's grave. They have people put pencils.
Oh,
you know,
I
for
love
her.
That.
It's really, yeah, it's very sweet.
It's all about the cemeteries. Have you been to Hollywood Forever in Los Angeles?
You know, is it, no, is, I mean, I don't know. My friend lives in West something out near Burbank. What do you call that area?
Yes, she's in the valley. So there's Burbank, or is she in Glendale?
Glendale. All right.
Oh,
Glendale.
Yeah, you're by the huge Forest Lawn. So that's the Forest Lawn Cemetery. But if you drop into Hollywood, to the Paramount lot, behind the Paramount lot, if you have like an hour or two when you're down here, it's called Hollywood Forever. And like two of the Dee Dee Ramone is buried there, Johnny Ramone. There's a lot of actors and Edward Bunker, the author, is buried there. And it's a beautiful little cemetery, and there's these little maniacal ducks that hate my guts and they nip at my pants. They're nice to everyone else. They nip at me. I don't know why. There's these ostriches, not ostriches. What are the peacocks? Big peacocks. Yeah. That just walk around. It's just kind of a magical place. I live kind of close to it. So every once in a while, and they do yoga there too, every morning at 9 a.m. There's like yoga at the cemetery. It's so rad. So.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Wow. Wow. So what's happening with you? Are you working on screenplays? Or are you teaching a lot? Are you
teaching a lot? Teaching a lot. I'm trying to find an agent for my book I finished last year. I did send it to my old agent, but she moved to CAA and she's like big time right now. But she did read it and she's like, oh my God, this is fresh and funny, but it's going to get lost in my lists. But she gave me 6 agents to hit up. She's like referred me to 6 agents and 3 of them have passed and I'm waiting from 3. So I have that, but I'm working on another book since October. And what I did today in order to, cause I had to get out of my book. Cause I'm like, this book I'm trying to get people to read, I haven't even read it since October, even looked at it. So today I printed the whole book out this morning and brought it with me so I can start like remembering the vibe of it. Cause the book I'm in now is so different. I don't know if you have that. Schizophrenia, where you're just like, you don't even remember the last book because you're so involved in these new characters. So, it's just working on stuff and seeing what happens. Working on screenplays, I do some like consulting here and there, and that's fun because I get to dive into other people's stuff and just go, oh, this, and this. And they're like, oh my God. But I'm realizing I read so many screenplays because I'm teaching every quarter screenwriting that it's just like, oh, wait, I see these things. But there's just something about, maybe I just need to get out of LA for a little bit, because there's something about being here that I don't even want to be associated with screenwriters or even like TV. Like, it's like, even when I go to a cafe and I see a screenwriter, I'm like, I pull out my papers. And I'm like, this is a novel. This is what real people do. I don't know what you're doing, man. And I think that's my problem. And I just need a break from being around.
Yeah,
it.
You need to get a new refresh, surrounding refresh.
Yeah, and that's, maybe I should just be up in San Francisco and just be in tech culture, and then I could just be disgusted with them for a while, and then I'll
Teslas. Yeah, all the Teslas.
Oh,
Rivian, is that there? Rivian, the giant.
Oh my God, I haven't seen one of those yet, but I live on the east
parked in
side.
front of our house. I'm like, how big is this? Like a tank, you know, the electric tank, whatever. The Rivian and the, oh yeah, I mean, Teslas are, you know, everywhere around here, you know. It's
Now,
like,
does everyone, now we're going to lose half the audience on this, but no, I'm kidding. We'll lose like five people because no, but nobody who drives a Tesla listens to this show, I'm sure. But the,
I don't have a problem with them.
I tend to find as I drive in LA that the people who are getting in my way, cutting me off, going slow, tend to be in Teslas. And I'm like,
and before it used to be a Prius, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's the Prius of 10 years ago. And I'm like, would you stop smelling your farts and just please, please just keep going on the street. Please help. But, someone's setting fire to the Tesla that was at a couple of Teslas in San Francisco. I don't know if you saw that on the news. And the news people are just like, and the police are like, we have no idea why someone would randomly do this. And I'm like, are you kidding? During the dot-com era, if you had a Hummer and it entered the Mission District, it was getting keyed. It was getting keyed while you were in it. What do you mean you have no idea? This has been a constant storyline of San Francisco. It's the San Franciscans. I've never been I've never been the guy that goes, hey, let's go tilt a Google bus. I know I was I and that's when I decided to leave San Francisco was when some of my friends and some of my rider friends were the ones stopping those Google buses in the Mission District and like trying to push them and scaring people that don't know what's going on. And I'm like, okay, we've lost it all. Cause like my creative friends are now scaring the crap out of newcomers into San Francisco. And that's when I was just like, I don't think I belong in San Francisco anymore. And then, but it's the San Francisco story. That's kind of course people are going to burn Teslas. There's something kind of beautiful about that too.
Well, and the car break-ins, I mean, that's just rampant, you know, that's really sad. Yeah. So
I still have my San Francisco. It's so funny. Like I'll be at a cafe and these other people have like laptops and then they'll walk away and go to the bathroom. And I'm just like, one, I want to teach them a lesson because I wouldn't mind another laptop, but then I'm like, you know, I can't do that because of morality. But when I'm in a cafe, I have my backpack. I still wrap the thing around my leg. And people just like leave stuff and walk away, and I still can't do it. I'm like, if it's not nailed down, it's taken. This is how I grew up.
Yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, and in Paris, you have to do that too. So
yeah,
remember, yeah, Paris has you got to keep all that stuff with you, and you know,
yeah, I do. My soul will probably feel calm knowing that there's a huge risk there. And then I'll be like, why does this feel familiar? Why does this anxiety feel familiar? And then I'll hit like total zen. It'll be like I've done yoga for an hour and a half and I'll just breathe freely.
When we go on our trip, you know, with women, there's mostly, there's a couple guys and well, I mean, men, women, doesn't matter. But I always say, we know, we look where we're going. I show you on the map. I point out, we're going to, you know, take this metro. We're going to change. We got, you know, we lose you. This is our end point, right? And many of these people have been to Paris many times. So they're not Paris virgins. But, you know, it can be, you know, changing, whatever. And so I say, we do all this before we go down in the metro. You look at it on your phone. We get the whole thing. You remember the stops, the colors. And do not, please take out your phone on the metro. Because
right.
It just happens and you just don't want to lose your phone. So just don't put your phone up, you know, be careful on the street. Don't put it down on a table when you're having coffee, someone will take it. And, but that's just smart because obviously we are not Parisians, but especially in the metro, you just want to kind of know where you're going. You can always stop. They have wonderful maps and, you know, go from there. You don't have to be looking at your phone all the time, even though the Parisians do, but they get ripped off too.
Yeah, that's even when I was in New York, was it last year, just bouncing around the subway. And I think it was my first time in New York since COVID. And it felt, you know, the crime's gone up in New York and it felt like it on the subways. And And I was staying near Harlem and was visiting friends in Harlem too. So it was when you start getting up there, the tenseness was kind of there. And yeah, I remember being on the subway one night around midnight, and these two guys just kind of like stood around me. They got on together, then they pretended they weren't with each other, and then they both sat like kind of right next to me. And I'm like, okay, these guys are a problem. And I just like sat there like pretending like I didn't know anything. I'm not taking anything out. And I'm not looking like a guy, but I must have looked out of place. And then we got to the next stop, and I just sat there for as long as possible. And the minute the door started to close, I jumped up and got out. I'm like, there's something going on here. So I'll wait for the next train, guys. But it's
That was good. That was really smart. It makes
yeah.
you think about what was that vigilante, Son of Sam, or something a long time ago, who would, when the subways were so terrible. Remember, there was that New York guy who was just like,
Yeah.
and someone said, Carl, why do you always bring that up? I said, I don't know. I mean, I'm just thinking like the worst subway experience. And they go, you kind of think that Son of Sam was justified, don't you? I said, well, there is a place for vigilantism in some, I'm
Charles
not
Bronson
advocating
movies.
it. I'm not advocating it. I'm just saying I could really understand. Yeah, that's right. That Charles Bronson movie. I don't know. It's, but yeah.
Yeah, it's
But
just
also in Paris,
I'd
they
rather
do
be.
groups.
Oh yeah.
So they'll have, and they have young girls. And
Yeah.
so they'll kind of surround you, and it's kind of like someone's talking with you, and they're taking it. So
Yeah.
it's kind of not just necessarily one I mean, it can be any combination.
I've heard the
But
recruitments
the
of the young girls, and that was like in the 90s when I went to Eastern Europe, and they would throw babies at you. Do you remember that? And it's just like, so if a baby's coming at you, you just slap it down and toss it and go, I'm not I know what you're doing. So if I see any young girls walking anywhere near me, I'll just kick them like right away, just like
And they may
complete
have a
assault.
clipboard or try and sell you one of the friendship or just
Oh
kind of
yeah.
like, I'm lost or yeah.
Yeah.
No, they work like that. And you're going, I was on a metro in Paris. It was October. And it had stopped at a, kind of number one line, which goes to the Louvre and, kind of the main line. But I was going somewhere and it had stopped for a minute. And then there were these young girls walking around and I was just standing. And then a guy who was a busker, I mean, a singer, like a, he would sing in the metro stops or, on the metro. You know how musicians get on and off. And
Right.
this guy was there, and I think he was actually American. And he was going, I see you. I'm filming you. He was yelling. I know what you're doing. You're trying to steal something. I followed you from whatever. And he was taking. He would see them and he would take pictures. He said, I'm posting it on Instagram or Twitter or whatever. I see you and I'm watching you. And they were like, and he was, I mean, he was seeing people getting ripped off. And
Yeah.
so he was yelling out, which was kind of weird, but I thought, fair enough,
Yeah.
call it.
Yeah.
And because everyone else was just, like me, meek and trying to look away, but
Right,
yeah.
exactly. Just yeah. And it's the things that I've been around the Tenderloin, where people who come to the Tenderloin and they're like, "Oh my God, I can't believe like this happened." And we're like, did you had you had your phone out? What do you, I remember when I used to DJ at Edinburgh Castle, and the guys who were kind of touristy, they'd be like, "All right, well, have a great night," and they put their earbuds in. This is like 10 years ago, and I'd be like, "Take those out," and they'd be like, "Yeah, right." And I'm like, "Oh no, I'm not kidding. You're going to get sucker punched. Take those out." It's like you don't even understand. It's like not, it's not a possibility. It's going to happen. It's 2 a.m. and you're walking outside with earbuds at, in 2000, 13. Don't do it.
Oh my God.
Good
It's always
times. Yeah.
something.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of fun to, I part of me, like, especially my end, the last place that I lived in San Francisco was the Tenderloin. Part of me really loves that experience that I had living in the Tenderloin, because it kind of not only raised my awareness, but really brought that neighborhood into like a home to me in a way, where it's just like, that's another area where people look out for each other, and the people who live there kind of know each other. And there's a little nod. And even if someone will come up to you and be like, "Hey, are you all right?" Because they know you live, they know that you live on that corner, and they've seen you walk by enough times. And there's always kind of a check in with each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Small little micro communities of unlike people, but they're held together because they, you know, live in the building or whatever. Yeah. People you wouldn't normally probably think of, but they form their own little community. Yeah. I've always liked the parts of the Tenderloin. Larkin Street. Remember they used to have a great, they used to have like, didn't they have a movie theater? And they had a French bookstore. I mean, it's all changed now, but a long time ago, they used to have a French bookstore in Larkin.
Right.
And there's some now.
And they used to have such a great newsstand too. I can't remember where it was. That was in the Tenderloin as well. It had like every magazine in there. I'd go there. This is in the 90s. I'd go there to get my Maximum Rock and Roll and a couple other like magazines that I could only get there. Joy of San Francisco, joy of Paris. What two lovely cities that you get to be in, Car.
Very lucky. Yeah. Yeah. Very lucky. I'm really excited to go back in April. Just time to go. It's just kind of a refresh, you know, just kind of, I'll be with people and I'll be doing a job and, you know, looking for the next story. But it's always wonderful to.
What a terrible job. What do you mean book 20?
Someone's got to do it.
I know. You know, bless your heart to be able to go out there and, you know, you could step up and work on an oil rig, but no, you stay dirtier. And that's what I love about you.
No one's ever thought that I could work on an oil rig. That's very interesting, Tony. Very interesting. I'll have to say that's a future, you know, bucket list thing, but yeah.
It's not a bucket list thing for me. I've watched some of those movies on oil rigs. I'm good. Don't need to go near one. Cara, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Tony. And you're overdue for a time up here. Okay.
Thanks for listening to Drinks with Tony. Cara Black will be at Roman's in Pasadena on Thursday, March 7th. Also, I'm teaching an 8-week novel writing workshop where we dive deep into the craft of the novel. This is limited to 10 students and it starts on March 18th and it goes for 8 weeks. Go to tonyduchesne.com/novel for more information. We'll meet via Zoom, have lectures, in-class assignments, and we'll workshop pages of the novel you'll start in class. Register before March 10th to receive $100 off. Go to tonyduchesne.com/novel. And if you'd like to join my free novel class, that's Saturday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Pacific on Zoom. Register for that at tonyduchesne.com/free. If you have a fear of commitment, if you'd like to have a first date before diving in working together for 8 weeks on a novel, that would be a great place to do it. That's on Saturday. tonyduchesne.com/free for the free workshop Saturday, March 9th. And tonyduchesne.com/novel for the 8-week novel class that starts on March 18th. $100 off if you purchase before March 10th. That's so much information. If you just go to tonyduchesne.com, you'll be fine. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCRLP, 92.9 FM, Los Gatos and beyond.